Good morning, everybody. I'm Pamela, and I'm an alcoholic from Manitoba, Canada. And I'm not originally from Manitoba. I'm originally from British Columbia. I sobered up in Calgary, Alberta, and now I live in Manitoba, Canada. I'm an alcoholic. I'm just thrilled to be here in Atlanta with you guys today, celebrating AA's 80th birthday. Wow. It sounded a little different to hear the Serenity Prayer today than it did last night, eh? Isn't that something? I'd like to honor the organizers and volunteers and all the other countless people it takes to undertake a project like this international convention. The attention to detail is amazing, and the result is absolutely astounding. Just look at us all. We're all such miracles. Are there any newcomers here today? Oh, good. We can stay. We just thought we'd be preaching to the converted, you know. I'm proud to be a member of the Dauphin Welcome Group, who just celebrated 65 years of AA in April. So we have a strong AA heritage in Manitoba. Our founding members used to take a train into Winnipeg once a week to attend a meeting and then take the train back home afterwards for a total of 8 hours of travel for an hour-long meeting. So I'm sure they had a little incentive to start that first group. Now we enjoy 8 meetings a week in our little city. And if you're ever in town, you can look us up at 25 4th Avenue Northwest. We meet every Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 8 o'clock, and every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday morning at 10:30. I just took my 25-year cake in May. So thank you, Dauphin, thank you, AA, and thank you, God, for AA. In preparing for this little talk, I came across a lot of material, but there happens to be a pamphlet called A Newcomer Asks. And it's just too easy for me. So that's where I went for my references here today. They used bullets in the pamphlet, but because I have to be different, I use numbers. And I have numbered them because when you get to be my age, you can get lost a lot. Speaking only for myself, of course. I can probably start hiding my own Easter eggs. Number one says, are you an alcoholic? I don't think people who are not alcoholics sit around wondering if they are one. I have absolutely no doubt at all that I was an alcoholic, as everyone I knew had been telling me I was one since I was 16 years old. They'd say, Pamela, you're an alcoholic. You should do something about your drinking. I'd say, I'm an alcoholic, so I drink. I figured that was why I drank, and I didn't like being around people who didn't drink, so I guessed it was okay by me to be an alcoholic. I figured I'd die an alcoholic death, like many of my other young companions, but that was before I knew you had to go to hell first. When I realized I had a choice between being a sober alcoholic and a dead one, I came to grips with what being an alcoholic really is. Number two, what can I do if I'm worried about my drinking? Well, you can come to an AA meeting and see if we can help. See if you think we can help you. Three, what is AA? I could recite the preamble right here, but we've already heard that this morning. And I can do it by rote after 25 years of hearing it at every meeting. But just let me say that AA is a place to go when your drinking has become too troublesome to live with anymore. With the help and encouragement of the people we meet here, we learn to live happily without drinking. Four, do I need to commit to anything if I go to a meeting? Well, for me, just getting to my first meeting was more of a commitment than I was used to making. By the time I got to AA, I had spent years breaking promises to be on time for work, for supper, for anything. So I was relieved to know I didn't have to sign up, just show up. Five, what if I see people I know? Being from a small town, I sure saw people I knew in the AA meeting rooms. Some of them I had already been aware were my members, some I had thought were dead, and some who I never guessed were even alcoholic. But we all had one thing in common. We needed help with our drinking problem. alcohol was a great equalizer, and we all come to AA defeated and among our peers. Some people told me that they had been saving a chair for me for years. 6. What happens in an AA meeting? Well, there are many different kinds of AA meetings. Speaker meetings, discussion meetings, step and big book meetings. Hopefully you'll get yourself to a beginner's meeting. But all the meetings follow a common thread. People talk about what their lives were like when they were drinking, what happened to drive them to ask for help, and what things are like now that they're sober and trying to help other people like themselves. 7. How can this help with my drinking problem? We are your fellow alcoholics, and we know what it feels like to be addicted to alcohol. We have been in your shoes. Many of us have been worse off than you are, believe it or not. And yet here we are, recovering our lives, our families, our self-respect, and having a pretty good time doing it. We hope you see something you want in us, that our meeting will give you the hope that you, if we can do it, so can you. 8. Why do AAs keep going to meetings after they're cured? Well, this is a question my ex-husband asked me repeatedly. He figured the longer I went to those meetings, the more chance people would find out I was a member. He couldn't understand why I had to keep going now that I was sober. It's working, so why not quit it, was his philosophy. With the help of my sponsor, I understood that I will never be cured. Alcohol was merely a symptom of my emotional, spiritual, and physical disease, and AA meetings are my medicine. If I miss just a few doses, even now, I can see the difference in my ability to meet life on life's terms, and I see that I must take it faithfully for as long as I want to be happy, joyous, and free. 9. How do I join? You are a member if you say you are. No one but you can say if you have a desire to stop drinking. 10. How much does membership cost? Well, there are no dues or fees. We do pass the basket at most meetings to pay for the coffee, rent, and etc. And after you've been around a little while, you find all the other things that that basket does pay for, like these pamphlets and our big book and stuff like that. 10. Oh, I already did 10. See? Even with numbers. 11. Is AA a religious organization? No. We have members from virtually every different kind of faith, and many people who never had any faith at all, and all sorts of people who had faith and lost it. We have no affiliation with any religious organization, but we do try to cooperate with all. 12. There's a lot of talk about God thing, though, isn't there? I remember coming to my first meeting and sitting there picking out the G word in the steps, the traditions, and cringing when people used it in their sharing. I just knew they were going to try to shove it down my throat. They never did. In our literature, Bill talks about finding a power greater than ourselves who can solve our problems for us. And he says that means we're going to have to talk about God. One line I read in the big book leaped out at me and killed my prejudice about the God thing. It said, "Who am I to say there is no God?" Those words freed me to try and believe in anything, something, anything that would help me straighten out the tangled mess I had made of my life. Today I have that belief and I have faith. 13. Can I bring my family? Well, there are open meetings who welcome relatives and friends of alcoholics. You got to forgive me, I wrote this down because I knew I was going to get a blank. And you can bring your family there. There are also closed meetings where only alcoholics are allowed. I didn't know this. I came into AA 1 week pregnant with my first child and proceeded to have 3 more children in rapid succession. So you can see what I didn't quit. I had no family in town, knew no babysitters, and my husband was always working, so my kids came to the meetings with me. In those days, the meetings were not smoke-free, so my kids often smelled of cigarette and cigar smoke, which my husband always complained about. But I felt it was healthier for my children to be at a smoky AA meeting with me than it was for me to not go to the meeting at all. Eventually, I started an open meeting that featured a toy box in a separate alcove, but my kids were raised under the tables of AA meetings, open and closed, and they were regular attendees at our birthday night potlucks. They knew the Serenity Prayer and the Lord's Prayer by heart, practically before they could talk. In fact, one time at a church Sunday school meeting, the kids were reciting the Lord's Prayer, standing in a circle and holding hands. And at the end of it, my girls chimed in, "Keep coming back, it works." And I was 1 week pregnant when I got sober, and my daughter was 13, and we were at our annual roundup, and I was chairing it. And she said, "How come you get a birthday cake every year, and I never get a birthday cake?" She said, "I've been in AA just as long as you have." And so at that roundup, the group got together and bought my daughter a birthday cake. It was pretty cool. Then she was so embarrassed, she was 13, and she had to get up there. Show you if you ask for it. 14. What advice do you give newcomers? Well, I figure if the newcomers like me, and most of the alcoholics I know, they won't be like being told what to do. So instead, I tell them what I did to stay sober for one day at a time. Stay away from that first drink, which means stay away from slippery places and slippery people. Attend as many meetings as you can. The more meetings I went to, the easier it was to ignore the bars calling out to me wherever I walked or flashing their neon signs at me wherever I drove. Instead, I located meeting addresses and made plans to be there. I heard people telling me to come to meetings until I learned to like coming to meetings. But I pretty much liked them right from the start. I finally knew I was home. And now I love them. Get a sponsor and ask her to take you through the steps and stick with the winners. It's hard to fly with the eagles when you're walking around with the turkeys. Get a big book, preferably buy your own. We are self-supporting. And then read it. Not like a novel, more like a textbook that reveals more wisdom every time you go through it. Join us as we trudge the road to happy destiny. What we have here is a fatal disease that is killing people in the thousands each and every day. Always and every time we go out drinking, it may be our last time. I know, I've lost many friends, two brothers and a sister to this disease. Not to mention the dozens of poor souls who come to our meetings in search of the answer and then don't stick around long enough to hear it. We pray that these brothers and sisters will get another chance to keep coming back. We may be anonymous, but we try to be easy to find. We're in the phone book, right there at the front. Usually a volunteer will answer and tell you where the meeting closest to you is located. If you need help getting there, they may send somebody to help you get there. 12-stepping, it's called. You can also phone AA General Service Office or look us up on AA.org. Thank you so much to the General Service organizers of this event for all their hard work in planning this wonderful party for AA. And thank you all for being here and listening to me this morning. I'm truly honored and privileged to be a part of this fabulous worldwide society of drunks. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Pam. That was wonderful. Our next speaker is Ross C. from Texas.
My name is Ross Clupton, and I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober all day today and yesterday and every day since November 14th, 1974. And I'm just as grateful as I know how to be for that. I have a friend named Amarillo that, well, he's here, but he didn't come today. I guess he's heard my stuff before. But he, I was telling him that I was going to do this thing of the new, what's it called? A newcomer asks. And I said, he said, well, maybe you should read the damn pamphlet. And my thought was, if they want to know what's in the pamphlet, they can read it. So, what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you what happened to me. You know, what I was like and what happened to me when I came here. And I think that's the very best way that I can tell you what I know about newcomers and how they're treated. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous in the normal way. Oh, I wanted to say one more thing before I started. Do you all realize how special you are here? You are 60 out of 60,000 that came to this meeting. That's pretty damn special, isn't it? I was thinking this morning when I was shaving, how many 75-year-old men can look in the mirror and say, damn, you look better than you did 41 years ago. I look better, I'm healthier, and I feel better than I did 41 years ago in July. And that's a great thing. I got here in the normal way. Totaled about 3 or 4 cars. Did a lot of really bad things. I ran over a bicycle with 2 kids on it. And by, you know, one of the things, I carry meetings into the penitentiary now, and one of the things I tell those guys is you and I are not different. Our circumstances are a little bit different. If I'd have been 2 inches to the right or 2 inches to the left, a little faster or a little slower, I could have sobered up in the penitentiary. I worked in those days for Sears Roebuck and Company, and Sears was a great place to work. They gave me great opportunities. Some of those I took advantage of. Some of them I blew. But I guess I could tell you that if it weren't for Sears, I wouldn't be here. Sears had this wonderful two-phase intervention program. The phase one was that they found out about you, and phase two, they just fired your ass right on the spot. And I was working in Temple, Texas, through a series of misunderstandings and blown opportunities and all kinds of stuff in probably the worst Sears store in the entire chain. And then they demoted me again. And they moved me over to manage a little satellite store in Cameron, Texas. And I don't know if anybody even knows where Cameron, Texas is. And I got a call one day, and the guy said, they want you at the store right now. And I remember driving over there, and I'm thinking, I hope they accuse me of stealing or something. I can be indignant about that. But if they accuse me of being drunk, I'm in real trouble. And I remember sitting in that little office in the worst Sears store in the entire chain, and for the first time in a very long time, I knew that things were going to be different for me. The things that went through my head that day was about the only really meaningful conversation that I had with my mother when she was dying, and she said that the thing she hated about dying young was that she wouldn't see her grandchildren grow up and she wouldn't see my career develop. And I was being fired because I was a drunk. And that memory was vivid to me. And I remembered that one of the things that was really important in rural agrarian Kansas where I grew up is that a man is supposed to grow up and provide for his family and take good care of him. That's the measure of his true worth. And I was being fired because I was a drunk. And in the middle of the worst shame and guilt that I had ever felt in my life, all of a sudden, I knew that I couldn't lie about it anymore. I knew I couldn't rationalize it anymore, and I just kind of knew I couldn't drink anymore. And that, I think, is the most important thing that happens to a newcomer, and Chuck Chamberlain calls it surrender. And it was in that moment that I think I became teachable. And I used to think that I could take credit for getting to Alcoholics Anonymous, and hell, I couldn't even take credit for that, because when I'm sitting there being, you know, I'm in the middle of phase two, getting separated from the payroll, and the guy suggested that I resign, and I said, well, if I resign, will you give me a good letter of recommendation? And he said, I will if you'll do something about your drinking. And I think that had something to do with where I ended up. I went that very day to a friend of mine that I'd served on a church board with, who was probably the only guy that I ever knew that really understood anything about alcoholics that wasn't an alcoholic. The first day I went down and just circled the block for about a half a day, and then I went in the building and they had a sign on the door that he'd gone to a meeting in Austin. I went back the second morning and he's coming out of the building, and I walked up and I said, Gene, I got a problem with drinking and I don't know what to do about it. Now, the day before, I'd gone across the street to this drugstore, and I looked up Alcoholics Anonymous in the phone book, and I went down to this little beat up frame house in the worst part of Temple, Texas. And it's got the shingles are all curled up. It looked like the roof would leak at any minute. The only thing different about that house than the others, it had one of those little aluminum grills on the screen door, and it said AA. And I looked at that and I thought, dear Jesus, I've got big problems. This doesn't look like big answers to me. So I went home. And when I run into Gene, there's a lot of things you can do about drinking. They have treatment centers and stuff like that. But he said, everybody that I know that's staying sober today is doing it in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, can you stay sober on Monday? And I said, well, I guess. And I did. That's the first miracle in my life. And this is where the interaction of a newcomer really begins for me. Is I meet him in his office on Monday, and this guy comes walking in. It's the 1970s. You remember double knit? Some of you will. Yeah. He's wearing double knit red plaid pants and a red sweater. And he walks in. He said, hi, my name is Bill Kelly, and I'm an alcoholic. And I thought, oh, Jesus, could you be a little more quiet? There might be two or three people in there that, you know, here in Temple don't know about me yet. But everybody in that room that day was an alcoholic except my friend Gene. So who cared? But we sat down there, and this is where I think the magic of a newcomer begins. We sat down and Bill started telling me about his drinking and what happened to him, and somewhere in the middle of that conversation my head started to bob. And that's the magic of what happens between when we hear the story as a newcomer. It's when we begin to bob our head, when we begin to say, yeah, that's what it was like. And when we got through with that conversation, he said, we have a meeting tonight and I'll pick you up at 7:45. He did not say, we will meet you over there. He didn't say, you come to the meeting. He said, I will pick you up. I think that's really important. I mean, we're talking to liars, thieves, rationalizers. We are the worst people on earth. And then we tell them, I'll meet you down there. What the hell makes us think we'll show up? Bill Kelly did not give me the option. He picked me up and took me right back down there to that little house that didn't look like big answers to big problems. And I remember walking up on the back porch of that place, and there were half a dozen people, men, standing around, talking about cutting the grass, fishing, stuff like that. And the minute we walked up, he started introducing me to people. And he said, "This is my friend Ross." And I thought, those sons of bitches, they've got a code. He's telling them that I'm one of those drunks. And let me tell you something, folks. You did not need a code to know that I was a drunk. My forehead was all broke out with bumps, and it had red all over it. You know, it looked like W.C. Fields' nose. You did not need a code to know that I was a drunk. But you know what? They just opened their arms and they loved me into the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, this is what newcomers need to experience. If you're a newcomer and you hadn't had that experience, go find another group. I mean, find one where they'll love you, because that's what we do in this fellowship. I remember going to that first meeting and they talked a lot about finding your bottom. And these people got up and, boy, they had some. You know, they'd been in nut houses and penitentiaries and straight jackets. And every one of them had lost everything they had, all the people that spoke. And I thought, damn, I've still got a little bit of money in the bank. I still got my 1964 Corvair. What if this isn't it? What if do I have to go out there and lose that? What little bit I've got left. And when the meeting was over, this old man came up. Well, he was a lot younger than I am now, but this guy came up and put his arm around me, and he said, "Young man," he said, "I have very good news for you. If you don't want to, you don't ever have to take another drink. And if you'll get in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, your life will get different." And on the way home that night, I really believe that in terms of the way that I felt, and not that I had any knowledge, because I didn't even know what day it was, but in terms of the way that I felt, I believe that I was taking the second step, because I looked around that room and I thought everybody in that room that night was worse off than I was, or at least as bad. And on that particular night, every one of those people was better off than I was. And I thought, there is something magic going on in that place, and I want to be a part of it. That's coming to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. And I wish I could tell you that these steps were all that easy for me, but, you know, they weren't. But everybody in those newcomer days treated me with such love and such acceptance that I just have felt comfortable in Alcoholics Anonymous from the very beginning. I remember I went to that same guy that told me if I didn't want to have to drink, I didn't have to. And I told him, I said, "Edgar, I'm having a lot of trouble with this third step stuff, turning my will and my life over to the care of God and all that." He looked at me and he said, "Ross," he said, "for you, the most important word in that step is not God. For you, the most important word in that step is decision." And he said, "If you will make a decision right now to get into the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, I promise you, your life will get different and you won't have to drink." And that's been my experience. And those are the kinds of things that I heard when I got here. I guess one of the things that I'm most grateful for about the way that I was treated as a newcomer is that some very practical, mundane, down-to-earth people presented this program to me in a very simple, down-to-earth, straightforward way. And, you know, I've had a series of spiritual awakenings as I've gone through this program. I guess the first one was I found out that the whole damn world did not revolve around me. You know, I had this guy in Dumas, Texas, that used to read that, it's on page 60-something right in there, about selfishness and self-centeredness. And I was going to kidnap that guy, take him out in the country and read him another page out of that book, because I thought that's the only one he knew. But I think that Bob Benson needed to be in my life so that I could learn that I am not the center of the universe. See, I thought red lights turned red on my behalf. You know, there he comes. I'm going to get him. You know, I just, you know, they put that thing in the ground 10 years ago. It goes red, green, you know, and you happen to be there in the red stop, you have to stop. You know, it's not personal. And the minute I stopped taking those things personally, the pain went away from a lot of that stuff. One of the other things I remember about the newcomer experience is when I was, I'm still down in Temple, and this young girl came into the program, and she had been evicted from her apartment. She had a new place to stay, but no way to move. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, that's sure too bad. And my sponsor pokes me in the ribs, and he says, you're the only son of a bitch here that don't have a job. You can move her. So I take my wife's car and hook this old beat-up trailer on the back of it, and we go over there, and we load up her stuff. It looks like the Grapes of Wrath. We got mattresses and rocking chairs and crap like that, and I spent all day moving her. I got home tired that night, and I've never felt so good in my life. Second spiritual awakening. The minute I'm more concerned about what I can do for somebody else, the better, the quicker, and the better I'm going to feel. Those are the kinds of things that they taught me here as a newcomer, and those are the kinds of things that we have to pass on. And what we have to pass on, in my view, is a very sacred obligation. You know, I was telling them up here a minute ago, I've got two grandchildren. And if our DNA has anything to do about why we're in this room, one of them may end up in one of these rooms. And I have a sacred obligation to preserve this program in the same simple, straightforward way that I found it, so that it'll be here for them. I won't be able to help them, but one of you may. And that's such a sacred obligation that we have to the newcomers, just to carry it on that way. We went up to Vermont last summer to see the granddaughter, five. And we stopped in Akron. We drove so that we could go to Akron. We stopped in Akron. I went to Dr. Bob's house. I never in my wildest dreams imagined that it would have the emotional impact on me that it did. I'm standing registering at the book, and all of a sudden I've got this lump in my throat and tears in my eyes, because what happened there 80 years ago saved our lives. Man, that's powerful stuff. And here's the other part of this obligation that we have when we talk to it. It's an obligation, it's a duty, it's a blessing, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. That when we sit down and tell our story to a newcomer in the same way that Bill Kelly told it to me, I know that Bill Kelly got it from Ken, who got it from Edgar. And if I had all the names on the tree, we're right back to Ardmore in Akron, Ohio. So when we deal with newcomers, and if you're a newcomer here today, you are a sacred part of what we are about. You are what keeps us sober. You are the very purpose for that. You're the reason we're here. So you're just very, very special. And I want you to know that I am so grateful to have been a part of this meeting and this convention. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Rock. Our next speaker is Marcy B. from Pennsylvania.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Marcia. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. And thanks for, it's an honor to be up here to hear all you speak, and thanks for having me speak today. I couldn't believe it when I got that email. I'm like, are they sure they got the right person? Anyway, my sobriety date is November 2nd, 1989. And I got sober in New York City, but I've been down in Philadelphia for the last couple years, and my home group down there is East Falls Big Book with these two guys over here. And this nice lady, Marcia B. from Philadelphia, walked up to me and said, you know, my friends thought I was the one speaking, because we have the same name from the same area. But I moved back to New York City about four weeks ago, actually, and my home group is the Trinity group there. Has been my home group for many, many years. So Alcoholics Anonymous works wherever you are. You know, it doesn't matter what city, state, country you're in. I love that. It doesn't matter our race, our religion, our political, affiliation. It doesn't matter if I believe in God or I don't believe in God. Alcoholics Anonymous works. And I'm really grateful for that. So, you know, when I was asked to speak, I like that we're all sort of doing it a little differently. I said to Eva, am I supposed to, Eva was in my home group. I said to Eva, am I supposed to speak on the pamphlet? She goes, no, I'd like you to speak on, the beginner topics on how, you know, what kind of things did you ask when you were a newcomer? And so, I will tell you that I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I couldn't stop drinking. I mean, I just didn't really know where else to go. And, I always say I drank in a crystal glass because I said to myself, if you drank in a crystal glass, you can be an alcoholic. And I didn't know anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I heard about Alcoholics Anonymous through a women's group that I was involved with called the Junior League. And the Junior League was actually doing plays on women and alcoholism. And it was the first time that I ever saw, it was 26 years ago, it was the first time that I ever saw a woman drinking by herself. And that was me. I drank by myself. And so I walked into Alcoholics. So really, I just got sick and tired of being sick and tired. I couldn't drink more and I couldn't stop. And I had heard of Alcoholics Anonymous through the Junior League, and I picked up the phone, called New York Intergroup, and they, you know, they said, do you want to have a meeting today? And I'm like, no. How about next week? So I proceeded to, so they told me. And I was in New York, but I had just moved from Philadelphia. And I went back to Philadelphia actually for a doctor's appointment, and it was an interesting experience for me because I had something wrong with my thyroid, and I was in the endocrinologist's office, and they take a lot of blood work. And something said to me, I will tell you that I don't know anything about medical things, nothing. And something said to me, you know, Marcia, you need to ask to have a liver test. So I asked the doctor, you know, listen, would you mind running a liver test? And I'll never forget because the doctor kind of looked at me odd and he waited a little bit and he said, well, why do you want a liver test? And I said, for the first time, I said, you know, I think I'm drinking too much. And this gentleman looked at me and he said, a person like you can't drink too much. And what that taught me was it didn't really matter what the doctor said. It didn't matter what my parents said. It really didn't matter what my family said. It didn't matter what my friends said. I knew inside of me, I knew I drank too much. And that was what counted. Not what anybody else thought. What counted was what I thought. I drank too much and I knew it. So I come into Alcoholics Anonymous November 2nd, 1989, and I walk into this room in New York. I tried to, like, slip in quietly, you know, in an orange coat. And, so everybody talked about everybody talked about alcohol. And I left that meeting thinking, what are they doing? And secondly, I wanted to drink so bad. I mean, I thought I was going to go into an AA meeting and you were going to help me not drink. And instead, I walked out of that meeting wanting to drink like I couldn't believe. And, fortunately, like it is here, a woman stopped me and talked to me. And She suggested, 90 meetings in 90 days, and she suggested I pick my AA meeting the night before. So when I woke up in the morning, my sobriety would be first. And, so I tried that. I tried that. I by the grace of God, really, I have not gone out since the day I walked in on November 2nd. But I didn't understand what was happening here. I will tell you, to me, the language of Alcoholics Anonymous was a new language, and it was a language that I did not understand. And really, all I wanted you to tell me was, how could you just tell me how not to drink? Okay, I don't really care how you felt today. I just want to know how not to drink, okay? I don't care if the subway didn't show up and you want to drink. I just want to know. And I kept, it's like, I was just looking for that. And so through the course of time, that first year, I will say my story is such that I did not come into AA thinking that this was the place for me from the day I walked in. I came in knowing that I needed help. And I was hoping you were going to, actually teach me how to drink, not, stop forever. But it took me a while to feel like this was a place that I wanted to be. Although I showed up every day. But it took me a while to feel like this was a place for me. And, my first year, actually, I wanted to drink every single day. I showed up at an AA meeting every day, and I wanted to drink every single day. And in my case, my sponsor said to me, Marcia, just because you want to drink, it doesn't mean you have to. I never had a choice before, I never had a choice to not pick up a drink. I had to drink before, and so I got a choice. So whenever through the times of being in AA I've had drink signals, I remember just because I have a drink signal doesn't mean I have to pick up a drink. What a relief. The other thing that, they talked about having, of course, a sponsor. No one's bossing me around, okay? I don't need anything else. I picked this lady who asked me to meet her. I guess I picked somebody at first, and then, it was a couple months later I picked somebody else. And she said, sure, she said, I'm not sure about sponsorship. What I will do is I'm going to hand you this pamphlet, Questions and Answers on Sponsorship. I'm going to hand you the pamphlet, Anonymity. I'm going to ask you to read it. And then I'm going to meet you for coffee, and we'll talk about it. And that's exactly what happened. I read the end, because, see, I thought if I took a test, I could leave. So whenever you told me to do something, I did it. And so I read the sponsorship pamphlet. I read the anonymity pamphlet. She met me for coffee, and she proceeded to walk through the sponsorship pamphlet with me. This is what I'm going to do with you, and this is what I'm not going to do. This is what we're going to talk about, and this is what we're not going to talk about. And it was listed right there in the pamphlet. For me, I never really believed you. But if I saw it in writing, I had more of a tendency to believe you. And so she pointed it out to me in the pamphlet. Then she talked about the anonymity pamphlet. I'm like, I cannot believe what people say in AA in these meetings. I mean, my God, I can't believe they admit these things, I said to her. And she went through the conversation about what did anonymity mean. We don't repeat what we hear at a meeting. We don't repeat who we saw. It's nobody's business, Marcia, what your last name is. It's nobody's business what you do for a living. It's nobody's business where you live. Okay, the only thing that you need to ever tell anybody is your name and that you're an alcoholic. That worked for me. I really don't know what I had to hide, to be honest with you, but, the anonymity issue was, I was looking for ways to get out, but the anonymity issue worried me. And, today I do the same things with new people and with sponsees. I have a couple here that will attest to that. And I also now mention in the anonymity pamphlet the reminder of digital anonymity. You know, what does that mean? What is digital anonymity? You know, what does that mean on social media? What does that mean in a text? What does that mean when we send emails? What does digital anonymity mean? Because it's equally as important. So anyway, so, you know, I plugged on through. My sponsor had me suggested after about 6 months that I do some service. And I ended up, I rolled my eyes then too. I ended up with a coffee commitment at a women's meeting. I'm not a huge women's meeting maker. I'm not sure how I made it to this one, but and they, you know, so at the anniversary, I bought the cookies. They didn't like the cookies I bought, and they complained. They complained. And so at the business meeting, they complained about the cookies. Well, I will tell you, I had a huge resentment over that. And my sponsor said to me, good. You can learn to have a resentment and not pick up a drink. Another really good lesson for me. And, of course, what I learned was actually there was a group conscience, and the group conscience had dictated what was to be bought and what wasn't to be bought. So, you see, it wasn't supposed to be Marcia's way. It was supposed to be what the group had suggested. You know, I didn't know that at the time. But the big thing was, how do I not pick up a drink and have a resentment? You know, I was taught hungry, angry, lonely, tired. For the first 7 years of my sobriety, I carried candy with me. And, you know, if I had a drink signal, they would, you know, I remember I had something happen in business. It was positive, really positive. And all I wanted to do was drink. And I called my sponsor. She said, I want you to go buy a candy bar, a Coca-Cola. I want you to eat that and get to an AA meeting. And I will tell you, by doing that, it helped me get over the edge of wanting to pick up a drink. You know, whenever I say this, in this new age of AA, people come up to me and tell me they have a sugar disorder. If you have a sugar disorder, please do not listen to what I just said. Ask somebody else what to do. I know it's a serious issue, a sugar disorder. So, but I don't have experience with that. But there are other things that you can do other than what I just suggested. But, you know, the point is that I needed to not pick up the next drink. I worried all the time about tomorrow, constantly. What if, what if, what if, what if? And, you know, AA, they taught me like I was supposed to learn how to live one day at a time. I'm like, how can you live one day at a time? Come on. I got business plans to write. I'm worried about my this. I'm that, 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 that. And my sponsor had me wear a rubber band around my wrist. And she said, every time you're thinking about tomorrow or next month or next year, you know, I was divorced at this time. And I was worried about how I wasn't going to drink at my wedding. And she said, well, are you engaged? And so, you know, that's just like, you know, it didn't matter what it was. I was worried about it. And so she had me wear this rubber band around my wrist and to snap it. And she said, I want you to snap it every time you're thinking about the future and not about today. And she said, I want you to snap that rubber band, look at your watch, and look at your feet, and ask yourself, is everything okay right this minute? Right this minute. And that trick has helped me so many times in Alcoholics Anonymous. Actually, everything is okay right this minute. You know, I mean, I'm like you. I've lived life here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and so I've had a death of parents. I've been fired. You know, I've had all sorts of things. And you know, I always thought being fired was a moral issue. You know, they can actually fire you because they don't like the color of your dress. Because they're at-will states. And so I learned that it doesn't really matter. Everything, even when my dad was dying, it was terrible. And she had me wear that rubber band because everything right in that minute was okay, and I didn't need to pick up a drink over it. The other thing was that she taught me was turn to my left and turn to my right and introduce myself when I walk into an AA meeting. She said, first, get there on time. Not that easy for me. So, you know, get there on time, turn to your left, turn to your right, introduce yourself, and have a couple questions. Hi, is this your regular home group? Oh, that's a nice watch you have on. Those are the questions I have asked for 25 years. And I learned then how to be a part of the world and not drink. So I'd go to business functions, right? I'd go to events where there was alcohol. I needed to show up through the years of being in AA. I'd be anxious. Nobody knew me. And I would think of, ooh, she said, turn to your left, turn to your right, introduce yourself. Ask how did you get here? And, wow, that's a nice watch. And, you know, people start talking about themselves. And before you know it, I fit right in. I've been fortunate. I worked for companies that sent me around the world. And I've been to AA all over the world, all over the United States. And I used that trick wherever I went. Because, you know what, I would travel and I would think, oh, gosh, I've never been here. These people don't know me. I don't fit here. And I'd hear my sponsor go, sit in the front, turn to your left, turn to your right, introduce yourself. And do you know, wherever I've been in the world, I earned that seat in Alcoholics Anonymous and I belonged. So those kinds of things, you know, they really helped me. I'm not sure what my timing is here. Okay, I only have a couple. I usually don't take notes, but I was really anxious. So I have to admit, I wrote a few notes down. And let me see. Oh, the other thing that, there's only really kind of two more things. And that was, you know, when they talked to me about attending meetings regularly. Let me say that people have already talked about the steps and the big book and things like that. And I will tell you that is, you know, I had a sponsor who walked me through the steps and the big book. But I was sort of asked just to talk in some basic newcomer topic, so please, you know, that is where I made my changes in the 12 steps, the 12 traditions. Please let's not forget our traditions, and the big book. But you know, I was recommended to me that I attend a meeting a day, which is what my experience is. So I went to AA almost every day for my first 7 years of being sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I was originally asked to do that, especially in my first 90 days, I said to this lady who had suggested that, I am much too busy to do that. I'm much too busy. Now, mind you, I was unemployed, but still... I said I was much too busy. And she said, oh, okay, I can understand that. She says, no, just, you know, you told me about how you drank. She said, let me see. You drank every day, right? I said, yes. And she said, about what time did you start drinking? I said, well, you know, I come home from work and I start drinking about, I don't know, 6 or 7 o'clock. Oh, uh-huh. And how long did you drink to? I said, I probably drank till about midnight. Oh, uh-huh. And then what happened the next morning? I said, you know, I had 2 or 3 hours worth of hangovers. I mean, I woke up with terrible hangovers, shaking, you know, shaking. Oh, uh-huh. So let me see. So you drank about 6 hours at night. You had about 2 hours of hangovers in the morning. So 6, 7, 8. That's about 8 hours a day, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, and you drank every day? Yeah. 8 times 7 is 56 hours. So you had 56 hours a week dedicated to drinking. And we're talking about an hour a meeting. Okay, 30 minutes to get there, 30 minutes to get back. So we're talking about 14 hours a week. And you drank for 56. That gives you 42 extra hours a week. And you still can go to AA every day. I'm like, wow, I never thought of that. That's the kind of practical stuff that really helped me. I mean, I just couldn't think it through. But then, like, what the hell do you do with 42 extra hours? She said, I want you to start reading the newspaper. And I want you to start reading the newspaper. I want you to be up on current events. Because, you know, current events would make me really angry, and I'd want to drink. She said, so I want you to read those current events so you can learn how to read them and not pick up a drink. And I want you to see if there's anything in the newspaper that you might find interesting. You know, I was in New York, so it was the New York Times. There's ads about museums, plays, you know, concerts. Does anything interest you? I said, I really don't know, because all I did was drink. She said, that's okay. I want you to just start to think about it. And that's how I learned how to get some outside interests and how to fill up some of those 42 hours and how to then, you know, get involved in AA and to do some service and things like that. I will finish by saying that through the years of AA, my sponsor has always said to me, always, 25, it's like, can you give me a new story? Almost 26 years later now, I have a sponsor who says to me, because I come from a region where you do service for 6 months. In Philadelphia, the service terms are different. They're shorter, but where I got sober, the service terms were 6 months at a time. So I have a sponsor that says to me every 6 months, and what service are you doing for this term? You know, all these years later, I was asked to be a GSR. I was about 17 or 18 years sober, and I called my sponsor. I'm like, come on, I'm 18 years sober. Isn't it somebody else's turn? You know, really, they want me to be a GSR. Isn't it somebody else's turn? She goes, no, it's your turn. And that's been my story. You know, I don't know what it is about me. You know, no matter why, I mean, actually, I'm a lot easier about saying yes now. But, you know, I have to say I've learned to say yes, even though in my mind sometimes they go, are you kidding me? But, I learned to have the smart feet and do it. But my sponsor still to this day, you know, especially I moved to Philadelphia, you know, I was just like, it was shocking to me because I had been sober in a region where I knew the culture, I knew the cadence, if you will, of the AA meetings. And the culture and the cadence of the AA meetings in another area were different, right? And it was still AA, but it was shocking to me. And I had a difficult time fitting in. In fact, there's some of these people here that without them, I'm not exactly sure what would have happened that are sitting here in the front row. They really helped me. But my sponsor said to me, oh, okay, Marcia, well, I want you to go to a step meeting, a beginner's meeting, and a big book meeting. I don't care what else you do, if you want to go to more or what, but those are the meetings I want you to make sure you're going to, because you're going to hear the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's where you're going to learn and hear the action. She said, I said, you know, the women go to women's meetings here. And again, right, I wasn't used to that. And my sponsor wasn't a women's meeting maker either. And she said, good. I said, I've got to go because, you know, I need to make some friends. And she said, that's great. I think that's a really good thing for you. But I wanted, she said, but one woman's meeting a week is enough. Marcia, you need to learn to fit within society and Alcoholics Anonymous. And society is made up of men and women of all races, religions, all sorts of things. And you need to fit there. So I want you to go to one women's meeting a week, and then I want you to go to all different ones to learn how to fit in. So that's what I did when I was in Philadelphia. That's what I've, you know, done through my years of AA. And I'm grateful that I'm sober today. I'm grateful that I have to say that I have great respect for alcohol. I do not think it's a bad or evil product. But it is not. It is poisonous to me, and I'm a member of society today. I'm an actual member of society today, and I fit in. And I'm very grateful for all that you've given me, all that you taught me, and all that you continue to teach me one day at a time. So, if you're new, please keep coming. You know, time takes time for this to work. And, you know, these always say, don't give up before the miracle, and don't give up before the miracle. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, Marcia.